First Light by Bodie and Brock Taney. Read by Sean Barrett. Old City, Jerusalem, Passover 2002. Passover Seder had ended. Moshe Saka kissed his five eldest sons, their wives and children, good night at the door of his Old City, Jerusalem home. The oldest son, Luke, embraced Moshe. Tears were in his eyes.
Papa, Papa, it just wasn't the same without them tonight.
Moshe patted Luke on the back.
Your mother and sister-in-law could see us all from heaven. Rachel's proud of you boys, and her 19 grandchildren. Nothing she loved more than being a booba to all these grandchildren, eh? God blessed us with 54 wonderful years. Could I ask for more? It shouldn't have ended the way it did.
Luke frowned.
It didn't end, son. I see the faces of our grandchildren, and it's like your mother isn't gone. I saw Rachel smile when little Leah smiled, no? I saw Rachel's eyes when Etta looked at me, and I heard Rachel speak when Danielle recited the blessing.
You sure you'll be all right, Papa? Luke seemed reluctant to leave. Moshe gestured towards his youngest son, Shimon, who stood grim-faced with his arms crossed in the doorway of the study. Moshe whispered,
"Pray for your brother. He's having a hard time, eh?"
Shimon, aged 37, had lost his wife in the same bombing that had killed Rachel. Moshe said in a cheerful voice,
"Your brother will be good company."
Alfie, the barrel-chested old gardener, raised his hand and stepped up to embrace Luke.
"And me. Don't forget me."
"Sure. Always, Alfie."
Luke returned the hug of the simple-minded caretaker who had lived with Moshe and the Saka family for over 50 years. Alfie assured Luke,
"Don't worry none about your papa and brother, eh? Don't worry. I take good care of your papa and Shimon. I've been taking care of your papa since before you boys was born."
Moshe added, "Me and Alfie and Shimon, three bachelors. We'll stay up all night with our pipes, talk about old times, talk politics and archaeology. What could be better to pass the time on Passover in Jerusalem? We'll be fine. Your mother would approve. Now go on home, Luke. I'll ring you tomorrow."
"Shalom, Papa." Then Luke raised his hand in farewell to his brother. "Shimon, Alfie, shalom." Luke touched his finger to the mezuzah on the doorpost, spoke the blessing of peace, and stepped out to join his family in the lane. It was a short walk home for them. The door clicked shut. Moshe stood for a moment with his hand on the latch. The clock ticked in the foyer behind him. The house was quiet. Too quiet. From behind Moshe, Shimon spoke.
"You okay, Papa?"
"Sure," Moshe replied.
"You?"
"It's been a long night," Shimon said wearily.
"Yes."
"I'll make coffee and bring macaroons before we show him. Eh, Moshe?"
The old giant lumbered off toward the kitchen. It was the first Passover Israeli archaeologist Moshe Saka had spent without Rachel since their marriage in 1948. The vacant chairs of Rachel and 32-year-old daughter-in-law Susan were stark reminders that 50 years had not strengthened the fragile existence of Israel. nor had time altered the Muslim vow to finish what Hitler had begun with the extermination of Jews in Nazi Germany. Worldwide anti-Semitism was once again escalating to levels unmatched since the days when Hitler began his propaganda campaign against the Jews of Europe. Through the worldwide media, evil was once again sinking its claws into the minds and cultures of the nations of the world. Even in the American church, many had begun to preach against the nation of Israel, in blatant disregard for the eternal promises God gave to the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Meanwhile, in Israel, life or death for a Jew was often a matter of missing a bus targeted by a terrorist bomber, or simply walking out of a restaurant seconds before a terrorist walked in. 1 year had passed since Moshe and Shimon had lost their wives together in the suicide bombing of an old city cafe. Moshe's wife, Rachel, had lived through the Holocaust, the Israeli War of Independence in 1948, and each successive war against Israel in the 50 years that followed. The mother of six strong sons in Israel and one adopted daughter in America, Rachel had often told Moshe that when the Lord called her home, she would be ready for a rest after cooking so many holiday meals for such a family. Rachel had died as she used her body to shield two small children from the blast that ripped through the restaurant. Shimon's wife, Susan, was an American archaeology student who had met and married Shimon 5 years earlier. When the Intifada had begun, her parents had begged her to return to America. Like the biblical heroine in the Book of Ruth, Susan had chosen to remain with her new Israeli family. Shimon's people had become her people, she said, and she would not leave. Susan had been 6 months pregnant when a ball bearing from a bomb exploded through her eye and into her brain, killing her instantly. The baby, a boy, died within minutes inside her. Susan Sacher's life had only begun when a Hamas terrorist murdered her and Rachel and the baby, and many others. On CNN, the murderer was called a political activist. Arafat declared that the bombing was Israel's fault. The Muslim mother of the bomber was interviewed with great sympathy, and she told how proud she was of her son. His pictures were posted throughout the West Bank and Gaza as a hero and martyr for Islam. His family received a payment of $10,000 from Iraq and $5,000, indirectly, from Saudi Arabia and Egypt. No one asked what this loss of their wives and unborn child meant to Shimon or to Moshe. Shimon, a professor of antiquities at Hebrew University, was mired in despair and grief. Not a day passed this last year in which he did not think of Susan and the baby boy he might have had. Tonight he sank into the leather wing-back chair facing Moshe's desk. Pressing his fingertips together, he stared blankly at the row of ancient pottery above the bookshelf. Moshe sat down opposite his son. He could hear the clank of dishes as Alfie cleaned the kitchen and prepared coffee. "It's late." Shimon did not look into his father's eyes. Shimon most resembled himself, Moshe noted. Tall, lean and sun-bronzed, prominent nose, high cheekbones. Dark brown eyes, black curly hair with a touch of grey at the temples. Shimon had the look of his Sephardic ancestors. He had also followed in Moshe's footsteps and had taken up his father's professorship after Moshe retired. "You are the most like me," Moshe said aloud, "of all the boys." Shimon inhaled deeply and turned away. "You and Mama. What? 54 years? I wanted it to be like that for me and Susan." "I won't offer you platitudes, Shimon." "Good. You know, my friends are saying I should begin to date again." He shifted his weight in the chair in disgust. "You know, like getting a puppy when the old dog dies or something. Horrible. Horrible." "Yes," Moshe agreed. "Papa," Shimon rubbed his brow, as though trying to blot out an image in his brain. "I don't know what to do with myself. You know, I go home to our little flat. Still, you know, I expect Susan to be there, waiting." "Yes." Moshe remembered the countless occasions he had forgotten Rachel was gone. He had called out to her, expecting a reply.
Papa, what can I do?
Work? Study?
Shimon shook his head.
I've lost interest in everything. I don't know. I've been granted a sabbatical from the university. I'm not going back after spring break, Papa. I need time away. Everything is dark. I feel blind. Blind without her light.
You're not alone in your grief.
Why is that fact no comfort? I keep asking myself, why? Why? You and I walked out of the cafe together. They stayed behind talking. Mama and Susan. I wish... You know... Well, you know what I wish.
That you had lingered long enough to die with her.
Yes. Yes. That.
I know, son. I know. It's not so hard for me. I'm over 80 years old now. I'll see your mother soon. Soon. But you have a long life ahead of you.
I suppose I'll have to live it in this darkness.
No. But you'll have to live till you see the light at the end.
Silence. Shimon pressed his lips together.